Hi, I'm Natalie Gochner. You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. We are all remote, practicing safe physical social distancing practices. I'm joined on the right by Senator Dan McKay. Hi, Dan.
Hey, everybody.
And joined on the left by Shireen Gurbani. Hi, Shireen.
Hi.
It is such an amazing time. I don't know about the two of you, but I've spent hours and hours on Zoom calls and conference calls from my home office in Murray, Utah. Dan, where are you coming from today?
I'm in Riverton, Utah, where the sun always shines.
And Shireen, I know you're in Salt Lake City in studio. Is that correct?
Yes, I am in studio. Took the 2 or 3 minute drive down from my place.
Great. You know, as I've been working with my team at the Gardner Institute and just others, it's hard to just jump into topics and without just asking, how are you doing? Shireen, are you hanging in there?
Yes. You know, my world is, of course, what's happening at the county. So many incredible efforts, a huge and really wonderful team working to do their very best to respond in really unusual and uncertain times. And I also work in facilities management at the University of Utah, where we're working very hard to support healthcare, doing a lot to keep our custodians safe, responding to some of the childcare needs, doing some construction work. It's a lot.
Yeah. Dan, you hanging in there?
You know, hanging in is the key word. I feel like, you know, working from home, it has its advantages because the commute time is so low. I mean, I'm able, you know, I had to step over the dog this morning on the way into the office. But, you know, it is nice that way. But I feel like there is a lot more going on and a lot more, you know, decisions trying to be made that are much more important, and it feels really high pressure compared to kind of the way things were kind of before the session. And so I would just say that things are a little bit more frenetic, especially, you know, on the business side of things. It's these are trying times for everybody in the economy.
How are you doing, Natalie?
You're nice to ask, Shireen. I am doing well. You know, my mother raised me to be a person that's optimistic, and I just find a way to do that. I did see a really interesting Gallup poll write-up, and it was one of these things where the Gallup organization looked at, you know, people's worries and fears during, in all of their polling, like back in the Great Depression, Pearl Harbor, World War II, the Kennedy assassination, you know, the upheavals during the 1960s, and of course the, you know, 9/11 and the global financial crisis. And in their polling, they basically said that human nature takes two directions. One is towards fear, hopelessness, and victimization, if that makes sense, or another towards self-actualization and engagement. I just think that's a really interesting point that at a time like this, you know, we have those two tugs coming at us, the tug of fear and then the tug of engagement. We can do this. And so I'm choosing engagement, but I have to work at it every day.
Yeah.
But thanks for asking, Shireen. You know, I think we should start locally and talk about what's happening in Utah's response to COVID-19. Governor Herbert has been very busy, and it's good to know during a crisis. This week, Dan, I know you'll know him, but he appointed the former head of the Utah National Guard, someone we know as, you know, General Burton, to lead the day-to-day operations of the Department of Health. That was a significant move. I'd love to hear your comment, Dan. He replaces, Dr. Miner, Joseph Miner, who is an incredible man, a physician with an incredible bedside manner. But Dr. Miner has some health issues that preclude him from being on the day-to-day. And I would also suggest he's not a field marshal like General Burton is. Dan, your quick comments, and then we'll go to Shireen.
Yeah, if you think about military leadership and what military training is, it is a coordination of, you know, a lot of moving parts and pieces to try and, you know, make sure that the military functions are, you know, are taken care of. And if you look at, you know, Adjunct General Burton's, you know, credentials and his experience, I think he is a very strong pick for the governor to, you know, to have kind of marshaling this effort for the state. I know that the governor has a lot of trust in the whole name, Adjunct General Jefferson Burton, just feels lengthy, but you know, to have the general be willing to step in and take these responsibilities. And also, you know, my heart goes out to Dr. Miner, who is in a tough situation, right? Where, you know, he has a lot of knowledge and experience and knows, you know, a lot about the Department of Health, but because of his responsibilities and his health and some of these other things, he really can't be there to deal with, you know, the day-to-day operations that need to be dealt with. And so, I think this is a positive step for the state of Utah. And I think the governor picked the right person.
Yeah. Shireen, I don't know if you know General Burton, but those of us that have worked in state government, he's a impressive leadership figure. And sometimes people are critical of heads of Department of Health that aren't MDs. But, you know, I worked at Health and Human Services and saw how MDs work very closely with people with leadership skills, and that combination's powerful. Love to hear your comment, Shireen.
I don't know him personally. I think given the massive operation underway and all of the coordination that's required, somebody with that kind of professional experience, that kind of service to our country is a really, it's an interesting, to me, again, I don't know him, so it's hard to say it's a great pick, but I think when I'm thinking about the skills that are required in this time, the kind of coordination that's required, this seems like an absolute perfect fit.
Yeah, that's great. Well, so
and
what we
known
do
fact,
is we,
Natalie, Jefferson, you know, General Burton was also an attorney general candidate at one time. When there was a vacancy, you know, he ran for attorney general as an attorney. So
I didn't know that.
So one of the things.
Well, we moved to a very heavy, heavy testing phase in the state's response. I saw some data today that I thought was really interesting. I work at the University of Utah, so we have some connections with ARUP, but our state is now amongst the top five states in the U.S. for per capita testing. And it shows the force that's being brought to bear as testing, as part of the Utah Leads Together plan, forms the basis for the state's response. And the best data I'm seeing shows that in late April, early May is when this will peak for our state in terms of the number of cases and infections and testing. And I think it's really incredible that we've been able to bond together as a state and be data-driven in our response. Shireen, your quick comment there.
Yeah, so I think this, one of the things that you said is really important for listeners to hear, which is that we have not even gotten close to the peak. It is still coming. And so the practice of physical distancing and continuing to take these health recommendations very seriously in these coming weeks is so important to not overwhelm an already strained healthcare system. I'm very glad that we are moving forward on testing in the way that we are. I know that you often talk about how lucky we are to have such a diverse economy here, and all of the research and medical tech that we've got here, I think, gives us an opportunity and, frankly, a smaller population than a lot of our other big metropolitan areas and states that we're seeing struggle in ways that we are not seeing. So I think in some ways, again, if people continue to participate and take seriously the health recommendations, we have a good shot at not losing too many Utahns in this. But I think at the time of this recording, we've already lost five. I'm heartbroken by that. I'm also very worried about our medical supplies, our PPE. Seeing that, you know, Herbert said yesterday that we have a stockpile of 27,000 masks, but it's far short of what we need, which is in the millions, 2 or 3 million. So I'm very worried about the coming weeks, but I am very optimistic about what Utah's doing.
Yeah. Dan, as a legislator, what are you hearing about the state's response? I'm hearing that you all are fixing to come together in a special session within 2 weeks, and just love to have you share with our listeners what's happening on the legislative side.
Yeah, so, I mean, there's a lot of conversations being had. Obviously, at the leadership level, the governor and his staff are working with legislative leadership, you know, Speaker Wilson and President Adams and their teams to kind of talk about a way forward for the state. We obviously, first and foremost, our number one responsibility in the legislature is dealing with the budget. And with the virus impacting work, impacting sales, impacting restaurants, thereby impacting small businesses. I mean, you go down the list of all the impact economically, and we know that we're going to have some significant alterations to the budget this year. What those look like and what, you know, what programs are going to change, how we're going to do things differently than we've done in the past. that will be, I think, a valuable exercise really for the state to go through. The other part that is going to, that's interesting too, is, you know, you have, so that's the budgetary concept. And then now you have the policy conversations, and there's a number of policy conversations that need to be had around, you know, the stay at home orders. What those mean, you know, should there be penalties? Should there not be penalties? You know, how do you, you know, make sure that in the short term we meet our educational goals and responsibilities as far as our K through 12 students go? Literally, you can just tick off one after another from a policy standpoint, the things that this virus is affecting, and then add to it a plan, right? How are we going to put ourselves back where we were, which we know is going to be hard when you see the losses we've seen in the market. We know that this is going to be a challenge. But the one thing, you know, and you hear this all the time, and I hope people recognize this, we're Utah. We're used to challenges. We're used to overcoming things. This is not new to us. We're going to be fine. I think this is not going to be easy. There are going to be short and long-term economic impacts, and we're going to find a way to balance those things. And I honestly, this is, you know, there are some who get into politics for, you know, they get elected for various reasons. And me, I prefer times like this when there are tough decisions to be made and worked through. And I watch that process on a regular basis, and I'm constantly amazed at the things we do. So I just have strong confidence that we're going to work our way through it. Does that ring true with your optimistic standpoint, Natalie?
Glad to hear of your confidence, Dan. In our next segment, let's talk some more about the state budget and Salt Lake County, what the county's doing to fight this COVID-19. I'm joined by Shireen Gorbani and Dan McKay. Stay tuned.
You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle on KCPW. For more episodes of all our in-house podcasts, click on the Local Programs tab at kcpw.org. And while you're there, please consider donating to KCPW to support public radio in your community.
Shireen Gorbani on the left.
Dan McKay on the right.
Natalie Gochner in the Political Center. You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. We're recording this on April 1st. I haven't heard any April Fool's jokes yet, but I will mention to everyone that it is Census Day. Once every 10 years, this country does a complete enumeration, not a survey, but an actual count of our population. It's every year that ends in zero. That's how you remember it. It's an incredibly important day for the state of Utah. Our representation, our planning, and even funding, federal funding is based on it. I saw a study that we get $9 billion a year of federal funding that's based on census counts. Shireen, are they talking up the census at Salt Lake County?
Yes, and Salt Lake County took steps a while ago to invest in a full count. So additional dollars, county dollars, are going into outreach. We are working directly with our diverse populations and our immigrant communities, refugee communities as well, to make sure that we are counting everyone, because I do think that representation piece is so key, and so many important resources come back into our community based on an accurate count.
Yeah. Dan, you're a political animal, and at least in my interaction with you. I'm just going to share a couple of census tidbits with you and get you to comment. Okay. We don't expect Utah to gain another congressional seat this year. As people know, there's a fixed amount of, members of Congress. And so what happens is you have a fixed amount, and some states lose and some states gain. I don't think we're in play. But I will mention that I saw some Brookings Institution data that projects that Texas, Florida, North Carolina, Arizona, Colorado, Montana, and Oregon will gain, and California, Minnesota, Michigan, Illinois, Ohio, West Virginia, Pennsylvania, New York, Rhode Island, and Alabama are likely to lose seats. That changes the political map, Dan.
I don't know if people follow, you know, the data as nerdily as you and I do. But if people look at the states that are gaining and those that are losing, it is interesting, because I think this is the first time, I want to say back to the 1940s, that California is actually losing a seat. California always seems to add a seat here and there, and they were right on the bubble last time and got one, and now they're losing that seat. And so it just shows the states that are seeing positive, you know, migration and those that have negative migration, or at least those that are growing beyond, you know, the typical growth of New York and California. Were you interested by that, Natalie?
Oh, yes. And, you know, it's the West that's growing, with the exception of Florida and North Carolina. So really interesting. I'll tell you something, two other things that are interesting, and then we'll bring Shireen into the conversation. But because of all of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saint missionaries who have come home, our count is going to be higher than we expected. Normally, missionaries are not included in the census. The census definition is your usual place of residence, or where you sleep most of the time. And since LDS missionaries are not sleeping in Utah, they're not counted in the census. This has been an area of frustration for our state. But now we have, several thousand of them back, and that's actually a big deal. Shireen, has that come across your desk at all? Have you, in your census, awareness?
Preparation? No, that is a very interesting tidbit. I would say one of the things that I've been very interested in and trying to educate the public on is the controversy over the citizenship question. Citizenship is not, they are not asking that. There was a lot of back and forth about that, but your information will be protected and it does not ask about citizenship. Something I'm personally very excited about is, for the first time, you can also write in your racial identity, and I will be writing in Iranian, which we have never had a count of Iranians, and actually people generally from the Middle East often feel very left out of the options that are available. And so there's a campaign to write in if you do not see yourself represented there, and I'm excited about that.
That's great. It's a part of a changing society. Dan, back to the representation issue again. By my read, you know, even though we don't gain a congressional seat, it does change a redistricting in our state. So this is for the state legislature, city councils, county commissions, and the like. I expect fast-growing areas like Wasatch County, Washington County, Utah County, and the Southwest Quadrant where you live, Harriman, Riverton, Bluffville, to gain increased representation. Love to hear your comment on that.
Yeah, it will be interesting to see, because, you know, there was a seat that was created. It moved from the east side to the west side last time we did redistricting. You know, when I was originally elected, I was elected in District 52, but I was not part of the redistricting effort last time. And then when it was time to be elected for the first time, or I guess be up for reelection, I was then in District 41. And so that's just because really a seat that kind of had straddled both the east and west side then moved fully to the west. You know, we're tight over here as far as where our seats are and where they're not. And so it'll be interesting to see how that's divided up. I suspect that there will be a strong, a strong South Jordan and Harriman, potential for a full Senate seat there, maybe part of Riverton, but it will be very interesting. Obviously, the interesting part too is that a lot of people out here are watching because they're frustrated about, county decisions or whatever it might be. You know, bless their hearts, the county has its, things that apparently rub people wrong every once in a while. And
tax reform.
One of them, obviously, yeah, tax reform. Well, it wasn't tax reform. It was more Olympia Hills and the reception that, some felt that they got there. And so, it'll be interesting to see how the county council treats that, because the county council is largely, divided up into districts as well. You do have at-large seats that are voted on. I think, Shireen, you're in an at-large seat. So is Richard Snellgrove. And are there two more?
Jim Bradley, just one. Three.
Oh,
three
just one at-large. More. That's right.
Yep.
Yeah, three at-large, Jim Bradley, which I really kind of like that concept, but that's a whole other issue. But you've got those three that are at large, so it doesn't matter what their boundaries are. And then you've got the other that are districted, and trying to figure out how those districts are, because currently, it usually gets sticky when you've got an incumbent that sticks around. That will be also an interesting thing from a growth standpoint.
Dan and Shireen, sticking with politics for just a minute, we've got a new poll out. This is a Dan Jones and Associates poll that was done for the Salt Lake Chamber. It's reported on UtahPolicy.com. But showed some interesting findings in the Utah governor's race. Former Governor John Huntsman leads the governor's race among all voters, but comes in a close second, really a statistical tie among just Republican voters, with our Lieutenant Governor Cox. Shireen, I'm interested from the left how you're seeing the you know, these Republican candidates stack up in this polling, and then Dan, to you on what you're seeing in the strategy.
So I'm really interested and would love to hear your insights on if we're going to see John Huntsman on the ballot.
Mm. Dan, let's go to you for that, because he's apparently been struggling to get the 28,000 valid signatures.
Shireen, did you see that? She just like... That is, in football, that's a stiff arm where you put your hand on their helmet and you completely avoid the tackle. I'm not going to lie. That was artful.
I could see it even with our social distancing.
Yeah. Yeah. it's amazing. We're not even in the studio and I saw it. That's amazing.
But I would say that's a question on a lot of Democrats' minds. So knowing that he's behind in signature gathering, he was popular with many Democrats when he was our governor. So I think that's really a question that we're looking at, as the signature gathering has been quite complicated.
Yeah. And I will say from a public health standpoint, now, I'm not making comment on how awesome signature gathering is, because that's a whole different conversation. But from a public health standpoint, where we have a policy in place that allows signature gathering, believe it or not, while we're sheltering in place, or I guess we're not sheltering in place, we have a stay home recommendation. But, you know, the signatures can be collected up until next week. So literally finish this week and all of next week, signatures can be gathered. I had a candidate for U.S. Congress. They have a signature gather out in the field, showed up, gloves on with a mask on their face, and hands me a pen and asked me if I'd be willing to sign a signature ballot petition for a candidate. And so I said, well, you know, I'm not sure if that's the safest thing. So I wanted to try this. Okay. So I decided I would go and help a candidate who was gathering signatures go gather signatures. I did this actually during the legislative session with Senator Lincoln Fillmore. And I went out and in 1 hour, I got, I think it was 17 or 18 signatures, right? In 1 hour. So I recently talked to a group who is trying to help, the gubernatorial candidates that still are getting signatures. And they spent, this person had spent 5 hours making a couple hundred phone calls with the new process that the governor created, which is it's a holographic signature. In other words, you can print out a form, the governor's form, print out the form, and you can then, once you print it out, you can then sign it and you can scan it or take a picture of it and send it to the campaign. And the campaign then can submit your signatures. It's, you know, a quote holographic electronic signature. They can submit that to Lieutenant Governor, have that count for the signatures. Well, that process, in my friend's feeling that went through this and did this for, 5 hours, made over 200 phone calls and ended up with 5 signatures.
Yeah.
So it took me an hour to get, 17, 18 signatures, or it took this person 5 hours to get 5 signatures.
That's terrible.
And I think what that tells you is this process that the governor is created is not sufficient to cover it. And that's why you still have candidates like the one that knocked on my door asking for a signature to get on the ballot. And I wonder what is going on. This feels so wrong. Anyways, I'm interested to hear what Natalie said.
Shireen, I'm guessing it's about time to go to gripes and gratitude. Is that right?
So another
dodge.
Let's start with you. Brief ones.
So I will take, or you want to respond to it, Natalie, quickly?
No.
Okay, then. I'm going to go into my gratitude is for our workers who are in warehouses, who are delivering packages. I'm hearing from some of our warehouse workers saying it's worse than Christmas. So many people are utilizing that resource, but it is definitely a strain on their health and they're worried. So whatever you can do to support people along our supply chain, please do it.
Dan, your gripe or expression of gratitude.
Yeah. Okay. So my expression of gratitude, if you have not had an opportunity to go to YouTube and type in some good news with John Krasinski, he started his own little YouTube channel, and it is, he posted his second episode today. But John has done a, hey, we need some good news here. There are some videos out there. I shared them with my kids. And honestly, it is so, so good. So my, I will just say, go to YouTube with your family and you can watch these Some Good News. It's Jim from The Office, those of you who remember, or, you know, Jack Ryan from the Amazon series, you know, Jack Ryan. Thrillers. But anyway, so go check it out, because I'm telling you, it is good watching.
Great. I'm going to share a thought from one of my favorite thinkers, Leo Tolstoy. He said, the two most powerful warriors are patience and time. And I think that's what we're going to need to fight COVID-19. I'm Natalie Gochner. I've been joined by Shireen Gourbani and Dan McKay. The program's produced by Anthony Scoma. Thank you for listening.